Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my guest is Gordon L. Dillo. He is author of Fire in the Sky, Cosmic Collisions, Killer Asteroids, and the Race to Defend Earth. We owe many of science's most important discoveries to the famed meteor crater, a mile-wide dimple on the Colorado Plateau, created by an asteroid hit 50,000 years ago. In his masterfully researched Fire in the Sky, Gordon unpacks what the crater has to tell us. He is a veteran journalist with more than 40 years of experience as a reporter or correspondent and columnist. He has written for the Los Angeles Times, the old L.A. Herald Examiner, and the Orange County Register, and other newspapers. And he has also contributed articles to a number of magazines. You can find out more by visiting Gordon's website, which is gordondillow.com, and that's GordonDillow.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Gordon to the show. Good day, Gordon.
Yeah, hi, Robert. Thanks so much for having me.
It is my pleasure, and as we communicated before the show, I mentioned that, you know, it always seems there's like timely things happening before I have guests on the show, and then I read yesterday about NASA and seven asteroids, you know, earthbound or earthward, and it was just like, boy, this is timing. So I think you've got yourself a topic that will continue to give for hundreds and thousands of years.
Yeah, I think so.
So let's talk about first about, you know, asteroids and comets. You know, can you, for the listeners who may not know, you know, basically what they are, the differences, would you mind sharing with the audience what they are?
Yeah, sure. Basically, asteroids are just space rocks. Some are tiny, some are huge, and they orbit around the sun. And there are billions of them out there. Most of them orbit in what's called the main belt or the main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. But every now and then, you know, one of them is sort of like a race car driver is going around a track, and suddenly one of the cars swerves off the track and starts cutting donuts in the infield. And Earth is in the infield, so those asteroids come relatively close to Earth. And when I say relatively, sometimes it's millions of miles, sometimes it's only thousands of miles. But so far, astronomers have discovered about 20,000 asteroids that come relatively close to Earth. Problem is that there's more out there. We really don't know how many are out there. And again, they range in size from hundreds of miles across to about the size of a beach ball. And they come in a variety of shapes. Sometimes they look like potatoes, like in The Empire Strikes Back. Sometimes they'll look like a dumbbell or a dog bone or like a kind of a square sugar cube. There's one half-mile-wide asteroid out there informally called the Halloween asteroid, that looks for all the world like a human skull. So they're really interesting things out there. As for comets, comets are a little different. Comets are made out of ice and dust, and they come from much further out in the solar system. And we don't see too many of those, but when we do see, you know, good ones, you know, like Halley's Comet, you know, long in the past, they're pretty impressive. They light up the sky. Asteroids are kind of dark, and we really don't see them as they pass by.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know. Now, that when you were talking about the belt, you were talking about the Kuiper belt, correct? That one.
Yeah. That's where a lot of the comets come from.
Yeah. And when I was reading your book, you talked about also a possible home for some would be the Oort cloud, or is that how it's pronounced?
Yeah. The Oort cloud. Again, that would be comets because You know, it's way, way out there in the, you know, in the solar system. And sometimes it can take, you know, it can take a comet, you know, a million years to complete its orbit of the sun. So these things are way out there. But, you know, there have also been some objects that have passed through the solar system that came from, you know, outer space, came from some other galaxy or some other, you know, solar system way out there. And we really don't know where they came from. That's kind of what makes them so fascinating.
Wow, it is. It is very, it's just very interesting. And, you know, when you were talking about the proximity to Earth, you know, how some, the ones that are coming, I read the ones that are coming this week are range anywhere from like 500,000 to like 3 million miles. So that was, I felt that was kind of a safe distance. But, but I also read that I guess there was going to be one in 2029, and then they said that it was supposed to come closer than the DirecTV satellite is.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's that one's called Apophis, and in April of 2029, and it's going to happen on a Friday the 13th, no less.
Oh my God!
This 1,000-foot wide asteroid is expected to pass within about 19,000 miles of Earth. And to put that in perspective, the Dish TV satellite is up at about 22, 23,000 miles above the Earth. So that's how close it's coming. Now, NASA is pretty sure it's going to miss us. So, you know, we'll keep our fingers crossed on that. But, you know, these things come by, you know, really pretty close, you know, pretty often. In July, there was a 300-foot wide asteroid called 2019 OK. That's its technical name. And it missed Earth by about 43,000 miles, which is closer, you know, much closer than the moon, the moon being about 240,000 miles away. So these things whiz by us all the time. The reason that we hear about them now is that for the first time in history, we're actually able to see them. We have telescopes that are powerful enough, and we have enough of them out there that they're scanning the skies looking for these things, and, you know, sometimes they spot them, sometimes they don't, but, you know, a lot of times they do. Whereas in the past, an asteroid could have, you know, swung by Earth at 19,000 miles, and nobody would have even noticed.
Yeah. I read that there's a NASA network called Firewall Network. Is that the one? Is that like a coordinated effort to look out for asteroids or other items?
Yeah, but it's not an early warning system. It's simply a series of cameras that pick up asteroids that enter the atmosphere, and these are usually pretty small ones, but leave a streak of light through the sky and sometimes explode with, you know, quite a bit of power. In fact, that was kind of how I got into this subject. I had never really done much science writing before, but I was having a cup of coffee at 4 a.m. on the back porch of my home in Arizona one morning. This was in 2016. And all of a sudden, the hillside across from my house just lit up. It lit up with this strange red glow. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And I'm thinking, what is this? And then a few seconds later, far off to the northeast, there was this tremendous explosion, this flash of white light. And a couple minutes later, I could hear the rumbling sound. So, you know, it was sort of like end of the world stuff. But, you know, in this age of 24-hour TV and social media, quickly found out that it was a small asteroid, only about six feet wide, something like that, about the size of a Lazy Boy recliner, that had zipped through the atmosphere at, I think it was about 32,000 miles an hour. And something traveling that fast, when it hits the atmosphere, it creates friction, which creates heat, you know, which, you know, made the glow. And then finally the pressure got too much and it just exploded with about half a kiloton of explosive power. So, it was the most amazing natural phenomenon I'd ever seen. And I started looking into it, and the more I looked into it, the more fascinated I became. And finally I wrote this book.
Wow, yeah, it's amazing to be able to watch that. Now, it's true when it comes to impact, a lot. I mean, extent of damage is dependent a great deal on what the asteroid is made of, like whether it be rock or metal or anything like that, correct?
Yeah, that metallic asteroids are much better able to withstand the passage through the atmosphere. The rocky asteroids, it's a little tougher. They aren't as dense, so they tend to burn up much more easily. And the majority of asteroids that collide with Earth and enter the atmosphere are the rocky sorts. So fortunately, our atmosphere, which is really very thin in comparison, to the size of Earth, our atmosphere protects us, from asteroids almost every day. So that's another reason we should take care of the atmosphere, Robert.
Yeah, amongst many other reasons, that is a good one to add into the pro column. So now you're in Arizona, correct? And so you were near.
Yes.
Meteor crater. So in a lot of your book, you discuss meteor craters. So tell us a little bit about, and I just mentioned it briefly in the introduction, but tell us a little bit more about the crater that was created by that asteroid.
Yeah, that's a problem when you're writing a book about asteroids. You have to have crater and created in the same sentence a lot. So it's for a writer, it's a little tough. Yeah, what happened was about 50,000 years ago, this metallic asteroid, maybe 60 yards wide, 70 yards wide. They don't really know for certain, but they're kind of extrapolating. It came toward Earth, entered the atmosphere, punched through the atmosphere, and hit the ground in what's now northern Arizona. And it exploded with the force of a nuclear weapon. And when I say exploded, it wasn't really an explosion, but it was the release of energy. And because this thing is moving so fast, the energy it released was just tremendous, and it left a crater about 500 feet deep and a little over 3/4 of a mile across. So I mean it's a pretty big crater. And the interesting thing is, because it happened so recently, and 50,000 years is it's a blink of an eye in geologic time, and because it happened in an area that's it's sort of the high desert up there, the crater has been almost perfectly preserved over 50,000 years. Most craters that left by asteroid impacts, they get worn away by erosion or by glaciation, or they get covered up by ocean or whatever. But this one is still there, and it really is an amazing sight to see. I mean, you can try to imagine it, and you can see pictures, but you really have to look at it. So if any of your listeners are driving across Arizona on I-40, it's located only about 5 miles off the interstate. So, stop in and take a look. It'll be impressive to them, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's a good little short detour, definitely.
Yeah.
On the 40. So now what are some of the things that we have learned? What has some of the things that the meteor crater, what are some of the things they have taught us? What are some of the things you have learned from just the study of the crater?
Well, one thing we learned is that we do get hit by asteroids. About 100 years ago, nobody really knew very much about asteroids. They'd seen the biggest ones, Ceres and, ones like that. But they didn't really know that there were small ones out there that sometimes hit Earth. And the asteroid that hit, that created Meteor Crater, actually was pretty small as asteroids go. As I say, it was only about 60 yards across. But there was a guy, there was a Philadelphia mining engineer who saw Meteor Crater and kind of figured it out. And, he found, samples of metals on the ground, iron and nickel and, those kind of metals. And he decided he wanted to dig the asteroid up. He thought that the asteroid would still be intact at the bottom of this crater. So he spent millions and millions of dollars trying to do this. And, of course, in the end, it proved fruitless because the asteroid itself had disintegrated on impact. But in the course of trying to dig up this asteroid and, you know, exploit it for its mineral value, he proved that, yes, this was an asteroid that caused this. And before then, no reputable scientists had really believed that asteroids ever hit the Earth. In fact, they didn't. They thought the craters on the moon had actually been caused by volcanic activity. So it was meteor crater that actually led us to the realization that, yes, there are asteroids out there, and sometimes they do collide with Earth. And that just kind of opened up, you know, a whole new field of scientific study. So meteor crater, it taught us a lot.
Yeah, very much. And it's very visible. It's something that you can see right in front of you. You can't deny what you see, you know, if you look at it.
Yeah.
So now, do you feel that we are, as a whole, you know, the U.S. and even globally, as a whole, that we are doing enough to in the study of asteroids, you know, and I mean, because like when you talked about that one in 2029, you know, and talking about the, you know, the distance, that's, to me, that's such a incredibly precise calculation for something so far in the distance, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing they can do this. They have supercomputers that can work this out, and you know, they have to take into account, because you know, when an asteroid comes close to Earth, it doesn't do it just once. It'll do it maybe every year, maybe every 5 years, maybe every, you know, 20 years. So they keep coming back around and around and around. But, you know, to figure this out, they have to factor in the gravitational pull of Jupiter and the gravitational pull of the Earth and the Sun and all this. I mean, it really is amazing. It's not the sort of thing you could do in your head. But they're really good at it. You know, they're able to predict. They've been able to predict in the past, you know, certain passages of asteroids with remarkable accuracy. The problem is, again, that we really don't know. We know about where the ones we know about, we know where they're going. It's the ones we don't know about that are the problem. We don't know where they're going.
Right. I would think that would be the case. You know, And it would seem that those unknowns are ones that might have a longer period of cycle around, you know, orbit.
Yeah.
That we would not have had time to catalog that kind of movement.
Yeah, or they could be, you know, of a composition that doesn't reflect much sunlight. And that's the way we can spot them is, you know, they reflect sunlight, so that's how we can see them through telescopes. Maybe they don't do that, or maybe they're in an orbit that, you know, has them on the other side of the sun a lot of the time, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of reasons out there. Now, NASA and other agencies have identified about 20,000 asteroids that come relatively close to Earth, as I said, sometimes millions of miles, sometimes thousands. But again, there's more out there to discover, and you know, the guys who are involved in this, the guys and women who are involved in searching for asteroids, they're a great bunch of people. They really are, you know, very dedicated. Most of them have good senses of humor, and you know, they're really fun to work with, and you know, they do the best they can, but their resources are limited. NASA currently spends about $150 million a year on what they call planetary defense. That's the searching for and the tracking of asteroids that could pose a threat to Earth. Now, $150 million a year, it's a lot of money, but it's less than what, you know, it costs to build one drone, one Global Hawk drone. Compared to what we spend on conventional defense, what we spend on planetary defense is less than a drop in the bucket. And that's why I say in the book, we really should spend a little more.
I would think so. No, I mean, when you think about it, you know, fate of the Earth, a drone, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like it would, you know, take too much to recognize the importance of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what do you feel the reason for that? Is it because it's such a rare occurrence that it hits and we can actually see what it does?
Yeah, that's part of the problem, I think, is that, you know, people don't think about asteroids, and I'm not saying they should walk around worried all the time about asteroids, but it is, you know, it's a low probability that we're going to get hit by a significant asteroid anytime soon, but the probability is there. And it, another thing is that it's new. I mean, it's only been in the past 20, 30 years that we've really had to consider this possibility. And for a lot of people, you know, the subject has sort of been sensationalized a lot in the tabloids and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll say monster asteroid headed for Earth, and you know, city killer asteroid on its way, you know, that sort of thing. And I think people get inured to it a little bit because they think, oh, it's Chicken Little kind of stuff. The sky is falling. But, you know, I think I'm hoping that people are going to take it a little more seriously now, because it's an actual fact that, you know, we have to deal with. And, again, $150 million is a lot of money. I wish I had that much money, but I'd be willing to chip in a few more tax dollars on my own, to increase the number of telescopes, the number of people who are working on it, and most importantly, they need some space-based satellite telescope systems, you know, to look for asteroids, which is kind of in the works, but it's going to take a little while to actually get funded and get built.
Yeah. Well, I can kind of relate to that media kind of draw-in, you know, because when I read that NASA article, you know, it's like, oh, seven asteroids headed towards Earth, you know, and then, of course, you read in the article, and it's like, you know, one's 3.5 million miles, one's, you know, 1.7 million miles. It's like, oh, okay, you know, so, but it caught my attention, you know, got me to read the article.
Well, I'm a former newspaper man, Robert, so I know about selling newspapers, you know, and it does sell newspapers, so, you know, far be it for me to criticize.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, with the title, you know, Fire in the Sky, Cosmic Collisions, and Killer Asteroids, I mean,
yeah,
you know, that kind of was a tension getter. Well, I'm gonna take just a quick break, Gordon, and I do want to invite listeners, if you'd like to call in and ask any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to pose them. And then when we come back, Gordon, I want to, you know, talk about with the idea of, you know, when you kind of mentioned something about not worrying too much, but I want to talk about should we worry, you know, and exactly you know, what our stance should be about this, okay?
Okay, great.
Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide: books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms: Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. And I do also want to remind you that we have recently added Spotify and Google Play to our contribution points. So if you use either of those platforms, feel free to get the podcast downloaded. Again, today my very special guest is Gordon L. Dillo. He is author of Fire in the Sky, Cosmic Collisions, Killer Asteroids, and the Race to Defend Earth. For more information, you can visit his website, again, which is gordondillow.com, GordonDillow.com. Okay, with that, we're back, Gordon.
Yeah, hi, Robert.
Hello. Okay, great. So as I mentioned before the break, worry. So should we worry? Or you know, what is the appropriate kind of concern, level of concern that we should have regarding this topic?
No, I think the appropriate level of concern is just the awareness that this is the sort of thing that could happen. It's sort of like living in California, which I did for a couple of decades. You know, you don't think about earthquakes all the time, but, you know, you realize that, yes, they happen. Whether they're going to happen under you or, you know, 500 miles away, you don't know. So you don't spend all your time worrying about it. And yet you do have, building code regulations and, you know, I guess earthquake drills or, you know, whatever, that sort of thing. So this is sort of the same thing. Asteroid impacts where they actually hit the Earth are pretty rare. They're pretty rare because, again, you know, most of the smaller asteroids that collide with us burn up in the atmosphere. But it's going to happen at some point. An asteroid of a certain size is going to make it to the atmosphere and hit the Earth. Now, where does it hit the Earth? Does it hit in the ocean and maybe cause a tsunami or maybe not? You don't know. Is it going to hit in Antarctica, you know, where nobody will even notice it, you know, until the scientific data comes in from satellites? Or is it going to hit in Manhattan? You just never know. But, you know, I think we got a really good wake-up call about the asteroid hazard back in 2013 when an asteroid that was about 60 feet wide entered the atmosphere. And several miles above the Russian city of Chelyabinsk, near the Ural Mountains, it exploded in the atmosphere. Now, usually when they explode in the atmosphere, you hear them, it makes a boom, nothing happens. But this was a big one. This was a big one. And the energy released from that explosion injured 1,500 people in the city of Chelyabinsk. Mostly because they had seen the asteroid and they ran out to the windows to look at it. And then when the concussion wave hit, it shattered all the windows and cut people with flying glass. So, I mean, this was an example of, yeah, these things, you know, can be dangerous. So, you know, people should be, you know, concerned. They should be concerned enough to, you know, insist that we have a good planetary defense program to identify and track, you know, potentially hazardous asteroids, but they shouldn't, you know, toss and turn all night about it.
Yeah, you know, I agree. You know that that awareness. Now, when you mentioned the earthquakes, I lived in California for a couple of decades myself and experienced a few. And you know, it's, you know, when that happens, you know you get that immediate shock of awareness that what it is, and of course, you know, if you're in a house, run to the door frames or whatever, you know, get yourself covered. But now with an asteroid, that would be hard, hard to do. I mean,
yeah, that would
really
be hard to do.
Yeah. So now your comment about the one in Russia, though, about, you know, the injuries going to the glass. I mean, that, you know, there's some practical advice there. You know, as far as not staying away from windows. You know, don't go outside and see what it is that's coming, you know, because of that potential blast afterward.
Yeah, but it's hard not to. know, it's like not looking at the car wreck as you're driving by, you know, on the freeway. You know, you see something in the sky, and I think, you know, most people probably wouldn't think, oh, that's an asteroid. You know, they might think it's some sort of, you know, jet, you know, or some sort of, you know, aircraft or maybe even a UFO. So they, you know, they run to see it, you know, and standing there, all of a sudden, boom, So that is something to be concerned about. The other interesting thing is kind of what do we do if NASA or some other agency spots an asteroid that's actually coming toward Earth, and they predict that it's actually going to hit Earth? Well, most people may not be aware, but NASA holds NASA and other agencies. Every couple of years, they'll hold a conference on planetary defense where they try to figure out, oh, okay, if we know that an asteroid is coming towards us, what do we do? Okay, and the best thing to do is to deflect the asteroid. Now, you know, this isn't Bruce Willis kind of stuff where you send up a spacecraft, and blow it into smithereens. I mean, that's not the idea. The idea is to just deflect it, just to slow it down a little bit, so that by the time it gets to the expected rendezvous point with Earth, Earth has already moved along in its orbit around the sun, and zip, the asteroid goes right by us.
Yeah.
And there's a couple ways to do this. One is to the method that everybody seems to like is called the kinetic impactor, and basically that's cannonball technology. You load up a spacecraft, an unmanned spacecraft, with a heavy chunk of metal, and you ram it into the asteroid as hard as you can and as fast as you can. And again, the idea is to just slow it down. I mean, just a tiny little bit, you know, and so that by the time it reaches Earth, it goes by us. The other idea is to use nuclear explosive devices to do it. Send up, an unmanned spacecraft, of course, and detonate a nuclear device, you know, a relatively small one, in close proximity to the asteroid's surface, and that, you know, could have the effect of deflecting it. The problem is that there's international treaties that prohibit nuclear weapons in space, and a lot of people get a little queasy about the idea of using nukes in space. So, that's kind of controversial. But what if you try to do, and this is what they act out in these asteroid war games that they put on every couple of years. They'll come up with a scenario where, okay, the asteroid's headed towards Earth. We've tried to deflect it. We know we can't. So what do we do? And as the asteroid gets closer, they can pinpoint exactly where it's going to hit, exactly where on the Earth's surface. So for one of these exercises, it hit Pasadena, Texas, which is a suburb of Houston. In another exercise, it hit Manhattan. And all these experts get together and they say, okay, well, we have to evacuate people, and what's the economic consequences going to be? It's really kind of fascinating to watch it in action. Most likely, if an asteroid is coming, you know, towards Earth and it's definitely going to hit, again, it's going to hit an ocean because most of the world is covered with the ocean.
Right.
Or maybe Siberia, or maybe Antarctica or the Arctic Circle or someplace where people aren't.
Remote.
Remote. But, you know, we do have to plan for these things. I mean, we plan for everything else, so we should have a plan for this.
Well, I agree. You know, I mean, it's you might have to dust off a plan, you know, I mean, depending on, you know, when it hits. But, I mean, if they do this annually, then I would think that the benefit of that is, you know, with technology advances, you know, that each year, you know, there would be possibly more tools to be used or explored as in possible scenarios.
Yeah, yeah. And in fact, NASA has a couple of ongoing missions to study one asteroid and to actually try this deflection method, this kinetic impactor deflection method on an actual asteroid. In 2020, it's going to launch a spacecraft that's going to intersect with a small asteroid called Didymos. It's a near-Earth asteroid, but it's a non-threatening one. And they're going to ram into, the little plant, you know, orbital asteroid that's going around the bigger one, just to see, will this work? If we hit this thing at a certain speed, how much will it slow it down? And, you know, will this kind of technology actually work? So you know, they're working on it, but these things take time and money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's important. That's another reason for the increased resources to be put toward that. If you can test the technology out ahead of time, you're just far more prepared, depending on what's happening. But the idea of even deflecting or moving it, you want to be able to have that international cooperation, so that, for example, if we were headed toward the U.S. and we, deflected just a teeny bit, then all of a sudden it ends up on the other side of the world. You're kind of just moving the problem.
Oops.
But, So I would think that it would be good to know that how well that technology works.
Exactly. Because you could try to save Manhattan, and wind up having the asteroid hit Paris, which would not be popular in France. So the more we learn about these things, but there's still a lot to learn, because asteroids, again, they're in all different shapes, they're in all different compositions. Some of them are kind of loose, what they call rubble piles. Some of them are like the one that created Meteor Crater. Are very dense, metallic, and so each one is different. So how does one technology work on these these different types of asteroids? This is the kind of stuff that they need to have, and maybe we won't need it while we're alive. You're a young man,
right,
Robert, but you're going to live a long time. But maybe our kids, our grandkids, our great grandkids. Maybe when it comes, if something comes up, when they're alive, they can look back and they find this database of, okay, this is what we did, 100 years ago, and it worked this way, and this is what happened. So, they're kind of building for the future. Yeah, I think the people who are involved in planetary defense, the identifying and tracking asteroids, they're sort of like the explorers, the mariners of the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, who charted all the reefs and shoals, in the world's oceans. And, once they were on a map, then the people who came after them, the mariners who came after them, knew where they were and they could avoid them. And so I think that's what we're in the process of doing now. We're making a map of these asteroids and where they're going. And so we'll know, maybe a generation from now, okay, this one's going to come really close in 20 years.
Yeah.
We better start thinking about it.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one in 2029. Now, 19,000 miles, that's a distance, but it's still pretty darn close. And, and when you think about the possibility of that asteroid interacting or coming into contact with something else, prior to reaching that close proximity, that could also alter the course. And of course, I'm sure they would, make note of that alteration. But it's, it would be nice to know, that there would be a technology that we could, pull out, if that, minor adjustment is needed.
Yeah. And excuse me, the point I make in the book is that, an asteroid missing the Earth by 19,000 miles, proportionally, it's like having a bullet pass by your head at about 16 inches. Now, it's not going to hurt you, it's not going to kill you, but it should sure get your attention. And that's what I'm hoping, will come from that. I mean, the scientists are, looking for, they can hardly wait till 2029. Yeah, this thing's going to come by so close, and they'll get such a good look. But it's already starting the, conspiracy theories and, that sort of stuff, that NASA's lying to us and it's actually going to hit us. I don't believe that. I don't think there's just too many scientists involved in this thing for it to be a conspiracy.
Yeah.
Now, could there be, some gravitational pull that they haven't factored, that they haven't fed into the computer? I don't think so, but it's always possible. So, we do need to be a little concerned.
Yeah, I would think so. And that's not a long ways away. It's one of those things where certain things happen around the world to raise awareness, to kind of dramatically raise awareness at one time, and certainly a hit to the Earth would do that. dramatically.
Well, fortunately, you know, a 1,000-foot wide asteroid like Apophis, the one that's due in 2029, it wouldn't wipe out the Earth. You know, it's not like the one that wiped out the dinosaurs. You know, I mean, that's the best theory, that it, you know, an asteroid wiped out the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. That asteroid was 6 miles wide. 6 miles wide. I mean, that's big. That's big. It created a crater, you know, more than 100 miles across, and I think 30 miles deep, something like that. And what happened was all the dust, you know, that it kicked up when it you know, blew out this crater. And I'm sure most of your listeners have heard this before. You know, it encircled the dust cloud, encircled the Earth, and blocked out the sun, and you know, killed the plants, and then the herbivore dinosaurs, you know, died out, and then the carnivores died out because there were no more herbivores. Fortunately, and you know, for people who accept the evolutionary theory, as I do, the impact didn't wipe out some of the small mammals. You know, these tiny little burrowing creatures were able to survive because they were underground, and you know, there was plenty of dinosaur meat to eat and that sort of thing. So by the time things got back to normal, the dinosaurs were gone, and finally it was the mammals' turn to shine. And 65 million years later, here we are. So it was a bad day for the dinosaurs, but maybe a good day for us.
Yeah, that's true. So now, this particular topic, again, was not what you said. It wasn't something that you normally wrote about. What would you mind sharing with the listeners a bit about your other writings? I can visit your website, but I kind of want them to know what other topics you've written.
Yeah, sure. You know, during my career, I wrote mostly about the law enforcement, crime, courts, military affairs. I'd been an Army sergeant in Vietnam 100 years ago, so I knew a little bit about the military. I did several tours as an embedded reporter over in Iraq with the U.S. Marines. You know, fires, natural disasters, earthquakes, as we talked about. I'd covered all these things. I just hadn't covered much space stuff. But I got to tell you, there's a certain joy, Robert, in learning something new, even at a somewhat advanced age, because, you know, it's cool. You know, to use the scientific phrase, it's kind of cool to learn this stuff. And I learned things that, you know, I just never, you know, had thought about before. And you know, and since I started this book, I don't look at the sky the same way anymore. You know, it's I look at it, and you know, I don't look at it with, you know, with a fearful heart, because again, the chances of, you know, me personally getting killed by an asteroid are pretty small. But I look at it with fascination for the wonders that are out there.
Yeah, that, you know, that's I mean, after studying, you know, asteroids and impacts, I mean, you just can't help but be, you know, moved by looking at that. And that in itself, you know, reading about it, you know, you obviously went through a lot of research to get it. People get the book, read the book. They, too, can shift their perspective. And that, you know, the idea of looking at the night sky with fascination, not fear, or just even wonder, is something we can do every night, you know. Cloudy night, but I mean, it's something that we can do to kind of energize ourselves. Just that's always there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, in a way, it's unfortunate that we can't see asteroids with the naked eye, because, you know, if you could put a giant porch light on every asteroid out there, you know, you would look up at the sky and you would see them, you know, crossing the sky, you know, at you know, a nice clip passing close to Earth, and that sort of thing. It would really be kind of fascinating. Unfortunately, again, they're hard to spot. You need a telescope. The smaller they are, the harder they are to see. So, you know, they're out there. You just can't see them. But trust me, they're out there.
Yeah, and just knowing that, you know, I mean, you don't necessarily have to see, just knowing that that's the case, and then having, you know, researched and looked personally at the proof of what happens when it hits the Earth is something. Now, is there what's next on your agenda? Are you learning something new or continuing this?
Well, you know, I can't let go of asteroids somehow. Every day I check, you know, the asteroid news and that sort of thing. it's fascinating stuff, and I like trying to get the word out. I mean, it's been fun doing that. Not only about the book, but I mean just about the subject in general.
Mm-hmm.
As to what I might do next, I'm just not sure. You know,
okay.
Right now I'm still wrapped up with space and asteroids.
Okay, well that's a good thing, a good thing to be wrapped up in. So, well, Gordon, I really want to thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I know that I'm going to be looking at the news that comes out about asteroids, you know, with a keener eye, and also looking at the sky differently. So, thank you for your time today.
Well, thank you, Robert. It's been an honor speaking with you.
It's been my pleasure. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Gordon L. Dillo. He's author of Fire in the Sky, Cosmic Collisions, Killer Asteroids, and the Race to Defend Earth. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is gordondillo.com, and that's GORDONDILLOW.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me. And select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Byte Radio Me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.